Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Ray! Do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock. Do the hammerlock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammerlock.
I do the hammerlock. Everybody's doing it. Hi, friends. Chris of the Chris Things Art here. Welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am very happy to be speaking to you this week on our new bi-weekly podcast. I feel like this has been a good move. But anyway, this week we're back for our Match of the Week edition of the show. We've got a triple header coming up with Richard of Video Plant, good friend of the show, and we've got three just absolutely bloody well delightful matches that I also loved making art of. You could check out said art on my Instagram page at Chris Things, or on my website christhings.com.au, where you can also just happen to be able to buy fancy art prints of said Match of the Week illustrations. But guys, it's weird having this last week off. I feel like I'm even more excited to talk to you than usual. I feel like living up here in the hills of the Sunshine Coast. Sometimes I get a little bit lonely, so it's nice for me to be able to break that up by talking to all my pals out there. Might be a one-sided conversation, but I think it's still fun. I've been pretty busy of late. I have been preparing for our upcoming Cult Lucha event this Sunday night. That's probably the most front of mind thing for me right now. This is a little classic Lucha Libre monster film initiative that myself and Trash Video Brisbane cult schlocky film luminary Andrew Leopold are tag teaming together on. With the great folks at Netherworld Arcade and Bar allowing us to use their fine establishment for this nonsense. I'm very excited for it. It's all going down this Sunday night from 7 p.m. Andrew and I will be up there on stage lollygagging about how much we love this stuff. Doing a suitable nerd out. Hopefully we can maybe get a little bit of insight into the genre and a little bit about this movie. We're showing Las Momias de Guanajuato, or you might know it as El Santo versus the Mummies of Guanajuato. We also have Mil Mascaris and Blue Demon in there fighting off these mummies. I'm very enthused about the whole thing. And of course, I'll also be hawking my wares, selling my lucha art. I'll have my little table there, might have some t-shirts. I've got a few last remaining calendars if you would like a Chris Things 2026 Los Luchadores versus Alien Invaders calendar. And I've got some fresh, fancy new art prints on hand, including a few prints of the posters that I have created very lovingly for these films. So a few limited people can get some fancy art prints of those posters. But yeah, dude, I'm very excited about it. Looking forward to all of that. But last week I was down in Melbourne, so I had my dear partner, Kayla, and her birthday on the Friday. And then I had a 6 a.m. flight to hop, skip, and jump down to Melbourne to set up my art at the Collingwood Town Hall for the amazing Lucha Fantastica event. It's our Australian loving Lucha Libre tribute live show. It's incredible. I had absolutely the best time. It was like sold out. Just a beautiful old like theater hall that was just packed to the rafters, as they say. And I was really stoked that my tag team partner in crime, Andrew Trash Video, happened to be there. So I was able to get him in, and he was able to witness this magic in person as well. But I just enjoyed the heck out of it. I had so many wonderful conversations with people. If there's any of y'all out there who happen to be there, who I happen to get to have a chat about my art, or if you happen to buy my art, thank you so much. I was just gobsmacked by the support on this evening and the day as well. We had the two shows, the family show and the adult show. It was the big love battle taking place on Valentine's Day. So yes, I did get special permission from my partner to, instead of spending Valentine's Day with her, traveling down to Melbourne for a Lucha show to sell my art. This is the traveling carny life that I live, guys. But I love it. I very much enjoy it. But yeah, dude, it was so great. I was just telling Richard after we finished recording this thing about I had just the most wonderful interaction, like so many wonderful interactions. But one that stood out in mind was with someone who ended up after much deliberation going through all the different art prints and then finally settling on one that I found a very interesting choice. So mind you, this is someone who's probably, you know, the great thing about Lucha Fantastica is it draws people who might not be the most familiar with wrestling, and then they just end up loving it in the most authentic manner possible. Makes me so happy to see. But we had this lovely lady who was doing such, who not the most familiar with wrestling, but she ended up selling on the match of the week illustration that I did of the American Dragon versus Will Ospreay. So just a absolute classic match for our you know, fellow wrestling super nerd such as myself. But I thought an interesting pick for someone who might not be the most familiar with wrestling. So I smiled, and then she was like, "Oh no, did I pick a silly one?" I was like, "No, dude, like you picked the best one." It's like, told a little bit about the match of the week deal, and also a little bit about the significance of that match and how that was one of the ones that I did that seemed to be a lot of people's favorites. So she was pretty stoked with that, and she said she might even watch the match. So man, if I can you know, create a journey into this wrestling nerddom through my art, dude, that's what it's all about. I just was so chuffed about that. But yeah, the whole night was just absolutely lovely. Shout out to all the wrestlers and like Senor Fantastico, his wonderful wife Paulina, who just put on just the most incredible show. I was so stoked to be there. You know, at the same time AEW was doing their show in Sydney, but I was so much happier to be at Lucha Fantastica, you know, for just the whole general vibes and everything. Just the most wonderful night. So yeah, I've been doing that, been cracking through a bit of commission work. If you're ever chasing a commission Chris Things creation of your own, please know that I love to do that. Probably currently looking, books are open for March and April. So if you have something that you would like me to make for you, please hit me up, swing me a little Instagram message or an email. There's a contact page of christhings.com.au. Let's make this happen. My commission pricing generally starts from $150 and can vary a little bit depending on complexity or how long it's going to take kind of thing or usage. But generally speaking, yeah, a lot of them end up being the $150 mark. Man, a lot of bugs are going crazy here right now today. But before we get into the match, we got one last thing that I wanted to talk about. I love Lucha Libre, obviously. Big fan. Love CMLL, love Arena Mexico. We had some very sad news that happened today that I wanted to acknowledge. So I love the tradition of Lucha Libre, and that's really what I love about Arena Mexico and CMLL. And I've been sad to see a lot of their 2 out of 3 fall, dos de tres caídas matches have been reduced down to 1 fall. So I was a bit bummed about that. And then another step in a worrying direction that came out today was they're getting rid of the captain's fall rules for these classic trios matches. So a lot of people thinking, is this simplification to pacify the kind of like Americanization of the company? And obviously we're seeing a lot of stuff with AEW and CMLL. So I don't know whether that maybe like has something to do with it. I mean, probably not. Like, honestly, it's probably just them doing it to try to make things easier when those out-of-towners come in. I don't know whether they're trying to make it easier for like the American or English speaking like fans who aren't used to these kind of like semi-complicated rules of Lucha Libre. But overall, it just made me really sad. It's sort of, there's a lot going on in Mexico right now, and a lot of controversy relating to kind of like the gentrification of Mexico. And I kind of feel like this is a bit of that. Like the gentrification and homogenization, I guess, of a beautiful cultural history and tradition. And a lot of people might look at it and just be like, hey, dude, this is just such a tiny thing. Like, why are you making such a big deal of it? But I don't know, man. Like, it's concerning. We obviously had WWE buying AAA, and that, grand scheme of things, I do not think is a good thing. And then now, perhaps this relationship with AEW is leading to the Americanization of CMLL. I don't know whether it's like directly because I'm assuming AEW hasn't like asked for anything, of these rule changes specifically. Maybe I don't know the reasons. I don't work there. Just looking at it from the perspective of a fan who loves like classic, authentic Lucha Libre. Bit of a bummer. So, yeah, this is just me shouting into the void. I don't think there's anything we can do about it. But, man, I very much hope that things don't continue in this direction. I think it's so important for wrestling and Lucha Libre Mexicana to preserve these histories and preserve these unique cultural presentations of this beautiful art form. And to see them all just sort of get homogenized and end up kind of feeling the same, just really kind of sucks. So, I don't know, man. What ifs? I actually had someone on Twitter reach out to me and ask me if I'm going to address this on the podcast, which I was quite surprised and delighted by. So I didn't want to let him down. Anyway, that's the end of my rant. So let's get on to some match of the week goodness. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back on the Match of the Week train. We're slowly endeavouring to get caught up in our now bi-weekly podcast. It might make it less likely that we ever will, but we can strive, right? But today, I'm very excited. We have 3 wonderful matches and 3 matches that I really felt that my dear pal Richard from across the pond, there would be no one better to discuss these than with yourself. So welcome back to the show, Richard of Video Plant.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be here. Glad to talk about these matches.
Dude, I always enjoy our nerd outs when we get to talk about these kind of matches. And a lot of the time I feel like the ones that I think of for you, they're kind of like the kind of more interesting, slightly left of center kind of matches, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. I like that.
And especially for this one, you know, the main one that was just blew me away. I mean, all of these matches blew me away in different ways, right? But the one that, that you brought to my attention, you sent me the link of, I mean, you know how much I love Blue Panther and Hijo dos Santos, and this classic from CMLL Japan, quite a deep cut, I feel, that a lot of people, you know, might not be across it as much as they should be.
Yeah, it was an awesome match. I went on just a total deep dive for Hijo dos Santos. I was just watching, just, you know, like, as much as I could.
Was that connected with his upcoming retirement, might I say, or you're just in a Santito kind of mood?
I think it's part of it's connected. I think it goes back to last summer, actually, when you had sent me a message like he was going to have a match in Mexico. It was like before like his last match was announced, but there's like a series of matches, and so I was just in that.
I mean, that ended up being his last ever Apuestas match.
Wow. You know, oh, yes. Really. And he didn't, of course, didn't lose it. But yeah, I just been on a deep dive, and there's so much of it out there on YouTube, of course. And this one just randomly popped up. And I loved, you know, there's just so much to, is this the one are we going to talk about this one right now?
No.
Oh, okay. I'll stop.
Into my brain. But we can put a pause on that for a second.
Okay, I will stop.
The match. I did just want to acknowledge that you know that was one of the main things. I was like, cool. You know, got to talk to Richard about this match, of course. But then right. You know, the other two matches we've got two other really like interesting kind of like emotion filled matches as well. So yeah, I think three I'm very excited to discuss with you. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of it, did you get a vibe of the collection that we have here of these three matches? Like anything that stood out to you or about them, like as you know, similarities or contrasts or anything that you know made you feel like, you know, this is a unique pairing in any way?
That's a good question. Let's see here. Oh, I hadn't seen two of the three, so that was exciting. The first one was definitely very emotional. You know, I read your post about it before watching, so that kind of gave me some backstory on the intensity of this match and how far back it goes.
That's a really good one. So that being Akitoshi Saido versus Go Shiozaki from 2024. The last singles match I believe they would ever have one against one another. Definitely at least the last, you know, singles match on like a big stage, like this one taking place in Budokan Hall. I think it's a good match to sort of know a little bit of the background of, to kind of get that emotion that you can definitely feel while you're watching it. And I feel like if you didn't have that background, you'd just be like, you know, okay, this is sort of like a bit of a slow match and everyone's like really seems like they're getting into it, but you wouldn't really know why, maybe.
Yeah, it's 15 minutes, I think, and there's a lot packed in there, but and it builds slow, but it's not like a slow burn match, if that makes sense. And I think that kind of comes together with the way it's kind of building towards the end there. I mean, basically, Saito is just kind of dominating the match until the end there. So I think that kind of like was in the back of my, the story that, you know, was in the back of my mind as that was building up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, all three matches in Japan, funnily enough, mm-hmm. as well.
Yes. Yeah.
One of them being just one of the most classic Lucha Libre showcases that you ever did see. But three very different matches, in some ways, like they're all quite unique. But I think the thing that for me at least links them all together is they all do a great job of showing sort of like passion and emotion. And I think that's probably at this stage in watching wrestling, what I kind of like enjoy the most.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one thing that's kind of, actually I was thinking about your the matches that you choose. It's always a good reminder for me to like it's not about chasing like a list of the greatest matches ever because of this or that. It's about connecting with the match, if that makes sense. So that's definitely something I've really been more aware of it over the last couple of years, especially watching Lucha, like some of those intense, you know, mask versus hair, mask versus mask matches really have that intensity. Mm. So it's really made me focus more on like more of the, I guess, the drama motion. Although that last match definitely is a clash of styles and it's pretty awesome. It's pretty back and forth, but there's emotion too, of course.
Like it's a funny mix of you know, sometimes we get, I guess what I probably first got into when I really, you know, got into the nerddom of tape trading and getting into wrestling and like getting these like match of the years lists and all of that kind of stuff was kind of the this more sort of quote unquote work rate style and like, you know, the most spectacular moves or collections of spectacular moves, that kind of stuff. And you know, I still love that from time to time, don't get me wrong, but I guess when you watch a lot of that for a lot of time, you know, and I'm like, man, I've been, you know, watching these kind of like five-star work rate classics for like the better part of 20 years, and slowly, you know, the amount of crazy like poison runners and like 450s and whatever the heck you want to do, right? They slowly kind of like, you know, you've seen them a lot, so they kind of lose a bit of the novelty. But I think the thing in wrestling that really doesn't lose novelty for me is wrestling that's just done with, yeah, with passion, with drama, with like feeling like it has a lot of heart into it.
Yeah.
And just like simple things like a great punch, you know, like
totally,
I could watch
all
those things and then I could watch a Terry Funk punch and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Well, like in the first match, particularly the Shiozaki Saito one, it's pretty stiff too. And I really like that, you know, the hard hitting stuff is very, it really sucks me in. So, It was a good match to start with before going to the kind of more elegant lucha stuff in Japan, and then getting some of that contrast of that high flying action versus I don't know, like would that be like a King's Road era with Kawada?
Oh yeah,
kind of
style?
Yeah,
King's Road.
Yeah,
but I mean, offset by the independent invaders with more of their spectacular kind of stuff. So. Yeah, a lot of interesting contrasting styles here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on for these three. I hadn't seen two of them, so it was a lot of fun to watch them.
Oh, dude, stoked. And yeah, like I really did think of, so our first one that we're talking about, Match of the Week 112, Go Shiozaki versus Akitoshi Saito. As I said, this one took place at Noah's big Budokan Hall show. Of July 13th of 2024, Noah Destination 2024. This was the show that actually had the main event of AJ Styles coming in and wrestling Mara Fuji in a also just a wonderful match. The same show also has a great match between Kenno and Yuji Nagata. Overall, fantastic show. Oh, and of course, we also got Yoshiki Inamura against Kaito Kiyomiya for the GHC Heavyweight Championship, and the actual main event that was just fantastic. So great show all in all, but the match of this fantastic show that spoke to me the most was this one. Akitoshi Saito on his final sort of like career run. This is sort of like his retirement road. He's actually the 0-1 World Heavyweight Champion at this point, the physical belt being the old AWA championship from back in the day, and yeah, they had a draw, a 30-minute draw prior to this, that was a bit more of a slower kind of affair, but I still thought it was a very enjoyable match, whereas this one in its sort of shorter nature was just sort of like them going all out, and for me having a match that you know, both of these guys are so just represent everything that is pro wrestling Noah to me. Two of the you know, most long-term members of the Noah roster who have so much history. I mean, you know, both of these guys being in the final match of Mitsuharu Misawa's life. In the tag match that unfortunately, Misawa ended up taking that like Sayu suplex and his neck breaking. So a lot in this match in terms of that sort of like background and drama and story, and it sort of like lining up with reality as well. Like I think from Misawa's death, Akitoshi Sayu really, carried that with him apparently ever since and had a massive weight on him, which is understandable, but the reason why he kept going despite sort of like wanting to call it a day was like he felt like he had to do it for Misawa. So yeah, a lot of emotion here in this one, and both of these guys, two of my most favorite Noah wrestlers, two guys that just put so much emotion into everything they do. And I really did love this from like, obviously, being like so close to retirement, Saito is probably far from his actual prime, but kind of making up for it with that real sort of like heartfelt passion that he did everything in this with, and starting it out real hot where he's just like going for Shiozaki with everything he's got, and that bloody pile driver on the outside with the exposed mat. Like, man, I think there's a lot to love in this match that in other, for a lot of other people might sort of go over their heads a little bit.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I love the early build. Well, first of all, the commentary on this was really good because it really brought color, life to the story a little bit, So it kind of helped tell that, because again, I wasn't too familiar. So aside from your post, but I have some notes here. Saito giving Shiozaki a DDT on the apron. That was awesome.
Yes.
And then he instantly was like grabbing his neck and then he's thrown into the ring. And then from there, his arms just getting, his arms hurting. So I love that little kind of package, that little, it was like 1-2-3 buildup for what was about to unfold. And then, that pile driver.
It makes so much sense as well with like him working over the arms.
Yes.
Sort of like a part of their previous match as well.
Oh, okay.
Because like basically all of Go Shiozaki's offense is arm based, between his chops and the lariats and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it was really cool seeing him like work over the arm, and then almost like we got to a point in the match where he's kind of like goading him to give him those chops. Like,
yeah,
he was willing to like take those chops because he knows it's probably gonna hurt Go Shiozaki's arm,
right,
to do it more than it will the punishment that it's actually that he has to go through to take it. Like, I thought that was a really cool, interesting little thing.
Yeah, he like trying to chop him with his hurt arm, and in the end, it's like he kind of builds up the energy to use it for those lariats in the end. But I liked it. There was also there's a moment that happened where, early on, Shiozaki's trying to chop him with his hurt arm. He keeps going back, and then he like lunges from the ropes, but he's not able to connect. Do you remember that spot?
Yes,
I love that.
For that sort of like flipping shoulder block.
Yes,
it was such a cool little thing. These are the kind of like matches that are a bit more on the rough side, right?
Yeah, where, yeah.
Like, there's little bits where you're like, I'm not quite sure whether he just went for that and he wasn't ready for that, or whether, it was actually meant to be as it was. And the fact that you get that question out of it, but still it just kind of like works in the context of the match, of it feeling like a struggle, a fight. I'm like, that's the kind of stuff I live for.
Absolutely. No, it's that raw athleticism. It makes you, it feels like a true fight, and it's not this match didn't play that way, but sometimes matches can have that choreographed feel, but I like a little, this isn't slop by any means, but like, I like a little hiccup there with those athletic moments of like, you're not sure, like you said. I really liked that part. Let's see here. And then there was shortly after, there was like a wicked suplex from Saito, before he applied the claw. That was pretty rad. At that point, it felt like that was a cool thing with this match too. He was dominating, and the commentary even says that he's dominating, but it starts to feel over and
I think it's great that like he was dominating, because like yeah. otherwise you're like, all right, so he's the older guy. He's the guy who's, you know, like yeah. on you know, his last legs here. So it'd be so easy if he didn't have such a strong presence in the early part of this, of being like, oh, of course Shizaki's gonna win. You know, it's like
exactly.
no doubt. But the way they structured it, I thought, was like quite smart in sort of like getting Saito over and making him really feel like a threat.
Absolutely. And then like he turns his build, Saito's build, Shizaki's build comes when after he's kicked in the head. He's like, gets kicked in the back of the head. And I think the commentary
was gnarly.
Yeah, the commentary was like, basically like, I don't know how he's still in the game. But from that moment on, that's when he starts to build back up for some reason. But the commentary is also talking about how like the kick to the head is a concussive blow. So you really start to feel like the end is near, but that's really when he starts to make his comeback. So I don't know. I from that moment on, I like 10 minutes in, and that final 5 minutes does a really good job just kind of slowly building his kind of comeback.
Oh yeah. And it sort of like felt like it was like kind of, you know, now or never, like that just sort of like adrenaline moment of just like, all right, we're in, you know, he just sort of like shocked him back to life, funnily enough. Like,
yeah,
it was
exactly
interesting. And then we got into sort of the more, I guess, the elements that are the nods to, you know, Misawa, but down that final stretch. I think, you know, we got the several, you know, gnarly looking Saito suplexes from Saito on Go Shizaki, that, you know, very, very reminiscent of the one that did the number on Misawa.
Mm.
And I don't think it was any coincidence that following that, Go Shizaki comes back with the classic Misawa elbows. And especially that like running Misawa elbow, and man, I was just like, all right, I can see what we're going for here. Like, it's sort of the whole story all comes together, followed by Shizaki hitting the famous finish of Mitsuhara Misawa, the Emerald Frozen, followed by that big, it was a lariat, wasn't it, for the finish?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, I love that.
I just thought that was so well done.
It was great. It was powerful. Like, yeah, he hits the Emerald Flosion, and then he gets up, and then he gets hit with that lariat, and it's done for. But I loved it. I thought it was great. I did watch the after match that you messaged me about. Very, very emotional. It was great. Shizaki could barely get his words out. And then he yelled something. I don't know. Do you know what he yelled?
I can't remember. I remember I looked it up at the time and read there was like a translation that I found somewhere that I'd recommend looking up.
Okay.
But it might have either been a lot of the time on Noah, they have a YouTube channel where they have like an English language one where they have, you know, like subtitles that they do to these, you know, little promo interview kind of things. Or sometimes even like I'll just watch the Japanese Noah YouTube page, and they have like the auto translate kind of like captions that are oftentimes not very accurate. But if you read between the lines, you can sort of work out what's going on there. But yeah, I couldn't remember off the top of my head, but I just remember the biggest thing the first time I watched it without even knowing what they were saying. Like, you can't help but get swept up in the emotion, even though it's like,
yeah,
a complete different language. Like, it's one of those sort of universal kind of things.
And absolutely.
Like the body language of like the immediate post match where Akitoshi Saito is just giving it his all, and he's like spent. He's just lying there. He can't even get up. And you know, there's sort of that moment of tenderness where Shizaki goes over to him and, you know, like talks to him and puts his hand on his chest, and the referee even comes over to like give him his belt that he's just won.
Yeah.
And he's just like, now was not the time. You know, you get away with him with that belt. I'm having a moment with Aki here. And yeah, it was just such a lovely moment of tenderness following a hellacious physical, you know, match that I just thought was so great. And it's like one of those things that just kind of like sums up like the lovely kind of like beautiful contrast of professional wrestling sometimes. And so that was the moment that I chose for the illustration for this one.
I love it. And I love the illustration. You have like the background is like a texture, like a dotted texture.
Half-tone kind of.
Yeah, that's cool. It's really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I originally had it just like the straight green, and it sort of like took away from the, I don't know how you'd call it, maybe like the difference in sort of like background and the main figures sort of like standing out as much as they should.
Yeah.
So then when I kind of, but I didn't want it to be completely dark. So then I found this sort of like halftone effect to kind of like be that good halfway point, if that makes sense. And I think that the texture kind of like adds a little kind of like ephemeral thing to it. I don't know.
That's cool. The refs like kind of faded in the background with that same color and the belts popping and the moment's definitely hitting in the foreground or the front there. Yeah. So good stuff. You know, I will say this definitely makes me want to like go on a stronger deep dive into the King's Road stuff. Cause I've seen like the greatest hits, you know, like a lot of those, you know, like the greatest matches, but I've seen some of those. There's some really good videos on YouTube, people kind of breaking it down, but this makes me want to check out more of it beyond this, the heavy hitters, you know?
Well, I would highly recommend it. I think both, the kind of classic, All Japan, King's Road days through that sort of like, you know, Noah taking up that All Japan kind of like a mission. There's so much great stuff, and I highly recommend that sort of like earlier Noah for anyone that hasn't sort of seen it, and sort of even like some of the later days of you guys, like, you know, Misawa and Taue and Kobashi. Is just you know, so cool to watch, because even though, you know, there's something I love about, you know, even wrestlers being a bit broken down but still having that heart, a lot of magical stuff there.
Well, I will definitely check it out.
All right, but that brings us on to our next match. We are now up to match of the week number 113. The big one that I was very excited to speak to you about, the one that you brought to my attention. We got Hijo del Santo versus Blue Panther. This one took place under the CMLL banner in Japan in 2001, January 28th, 2001. I guess this was kind of like the precursor to Fantasticomania in some ways. But a super interesting match and show, and just celebration of everything Lucha Libre Mexicana. I adored every bit of this, and it took me a while to watch after you sent it to me, I think, but as soon as I did, I was like, dude, there's no way this can't be the match of the week. This is just like everything for me right now.
There's a magic to this match. It feels like a, like when you start it, it's like an exhibition or like preseason game, you know, but it's not. Like, they're not phoning it in. It's a showcase, but it's hard hitting, and it's, I got totally sucked in. I got lost in it. I'm so happy
absolutely.
You dug it. Yeah.
Yeah, man, for sure. And it's funny how I think the changing of the gears in this match is the thing that I found the most interesting, because we get like a lot of just amazing, you know, wrestling from both of these two, especially in that early part with like more of the Yaveo kind of like style exchanges. That was just beautiful stuff. But then there's a changing of gears that happens where it just gets really rough.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, Blue Panther is the one that starts it. There's almost like a point where he's sick of being out-wrestled by Hijo del Santo.
Yeah.
And then he just gets real rough. And then in the end, Santo definitely gives it back in kind. Man, so good.
Yeah, I feel like Blue Panther is kind of goading him a bit. He uses the chair first, if I remember correctly.
I was rewatching it after that beautiful, you know, earlier exchange.
Yes,
You know, they sort of start brawling on the outside. I'm like, whoa, what happened here? You know, what was it that Panther was like, hey, all right, now we're getting rough. And it's just like he's got him in like a submission, and then it's just that next one that Santo like counters out of it. And then he's just like, that's it. And he just holds back and punches him. And then
on
the outside, he grabs like the chair and...
So rad. Dude, there's some moments too, like... Yeah, there's some like hard hitting moments, like Hijo dos Santos like hitting his head with hitting Blue Panther's head with his elbow pretty hard.
That moment was like really stood out to me. I'm like, man, we got earliest member of the Blackpool Combat Club, Hijo del Santo, here with his back elbow.
So awesome. No, it's also that it's in Japan in front of that crowd and their reactions. And then, you know, that it's mic'd so well, you can hear their grunts and them talking to each other. I don't speak Spanish. I'm just pretending they're like talking trash to each other. It's really cool. It's a really cool match. This is a matchup that I wish I could see more of. And this is probably the best quality of a match between the two of them. But have you seen that photo of a match between the two of them where Santito's head is just drenched in blood?
Yes, I have.
And then Blue Panther's mask is completely torn. Have you seen that match?
I haven't seen the match. I've seen that there's a few other ones on YouTube. There's even one that like goes like, like it says like it's a 30-minute runtime and it's got this sort of like red ring. So I'm like, I'll have to watch that one. I know there's that other one that's like in more of the studio setting that we spoke about as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I've watched all those and I haven't seen that one. I would do anything to see it. But the reason I mention that is like you have that version, like the brawling version of it. And then you've got this really like breathtaking, mesmerizing, like showcase in Japan. It's like
some
art.
Of those like beautiful, like classic lucha exchanges.
Yes,
that you know Hijo del Santo just like so gracefully, like doing these like arm drags and pop ups and like spin around tijeras and oh man, it's just you watch it and my biggest thing was like, you know, the way it flows back and forth between physicality to just this beautiful classic like lucha libre style wrestling is just breathtaking. And I feel that this really sort of captures that classic kind of like retro lucha style that we sadly just don't see as much of anymore these days.
Yeah, the even the spinning like head scissors at the beginning.
Oh, that was so cool, dude. Like,
so cool.
Sort of like gets up around and then takes him over with the head scissors. Like, just such a classic, like, old school move.
It's awesome. Like, but yeah, it's like, again, it's like, it looks like art. I don't know. I loved it.
Apparently,
and like,
that was a big classic move. Have you ever heard of Red Bastien?
I'm not sure if I have. If I'm being honest,
it was one of those classic sort of like wrestlers from the 70s, 60s, and 70s, in like the California region. I think he also did some stuff in AWA, but not too much matches of his exist. But he was one of those guys that all the old school wrestlers used to like talk up, and he was just sort of like the master of that beautiful like head scissors takeover. Man, I love that move so much. Back in my wrestling days, I loved it so much. I wanted to try to do it because I just thought it was such a cool like babyface spot. But in actual like in execution, it's so hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of it is like the dude taking it, knowing how to sort of like get you up there into position, and you're both working together to do it. But it really just seems like one of those beautiful moves that's just sort of like lost to the sands of time.
Oh,
it was so graceful. There's like two of them back to back, and yeah, I loved it. This match was just like, yeah, it totally took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting it to be as awesome as it was, mainly because I hadn't heard about it. But that's how a lot of those matches are sometimes. You watch
For sure. Lucha match. I mean, I think a lot of people wouldn't even, know that a thing called CMLL Japan even existed.
Oh my god. There's a tag match with Hijo del Santo and is it Bastia versus Cassis and Super Astro from. Have you seen that one?
Is it Bastia Salvaje, that one?
Yes. It's from 1997. That match is awesome as well.
I haven't watched it in the longest time.
Oh my god. Yeah. But again, it's another thing where, there's no commentary and it's in Japan and, I don't know. It's just, it's a different experience because you're not having the roar of the crowd, but it's a very pleasant, combo. I love it.
I mean, I always loved the watching those sort of Fantasticomania shows that the CMLL guys would do in New Japan, because you're just sort of like getting such a refreshing kind of like take on like the Japanese fans just being so there for this, and like maybe not being the most accustomed to some of the styles, but it almost just like they have this. And a beautiful like naivety and like how it's like just that their minds are blown by this stuff in just like the most pure way that just makes me so happy to get to watch.
Well, Lucha for me, like, it kind of seduced me a bit, because at first I wasn't it wasn't the easy thing for me to follow, like the 2-3 fall structure and but I don't know,
falls and everything.
But I got lured into it, and now I'm kind of obsessed with it. There's just so much to like find on the internet. But yeah, I'm so happy that you liked this one, and I also love, again, I love the piece you did for this one. So cool. I love that blue, and I love like the sweat flying off Del Santo's arm. It's pretty rad.
It was just really captured that. Going from the beautiful stuff we're just talking about to just such like blunt force trauma, like,
yes, yeah,
and then shortly after he has those really stiff short kicks
yes,
that he gives Blue Panther as well.
I love, yeah, like,
just the salty Santito is the best Santito.
Oh my god, I love him, dude. He might be my favorite right now. I've watched so much in the last few months, and again, that's what I love, is like in this it's so graceful, and there's those moments of violence, but in some of those brawls he's just fucking, really, he's a scoundrel.
Oh man, yeah, he's both great on either side of the physicality.
Absolutely.
Whether he's like taking it or whether he's like out on the dishing outside, but such an amazing sort of he's a wrestler that I feel like a lot of people who may be into current lucha, they kind of miss the Hijo del Santo heyday. I don't think he gets talked about nearly as much as he should. For me, like, easily one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
I agree. I'm surprised by it. Actually, it's kind of like his retirement thing just kind of happened too. I haven't even seen that match. Did you watch it?
I haven't seen the final one yet.
Okay.
I know there were some copies of it floating around, but I think there was some behind a paywall or something as well.
Okay.
It was one of those ones that was a bit tricky to be able to actually find. But yeah, it was a bit sad sort of how his retirement thing came out, because they kind of purposely stretched it out. So it's like you felt like every time, you were seeing him on this big show, that was it. And then the next to be like, all right, but no, now this one is the, sort of like the boy cries wolf kind of thing. And I think a lot of people had a bit of a bad taste left in their mouth from that Apuestas elimination multi-man match thing, the one that I went to. Just because they sort of like originally advertised it as it was going to be Hijo del Santo versus Fuerza Guerrera. And then it's like, all right, and then this guy gets added into the match, and then this guy gets added into the match. So I think, yeah, that unfortunately kind of in Mexico, I think people kind of like got a bit of a bad taste towards the end of that. So then, you know, when he did do the final one, I'll be interested to watch it to see whether it's like people still had a bit of that resentment while watching it or whether it had more of a positive reception. But, you know, I hope he got a good send-off because, you know, he was an absolutely incredible wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, some of my favorite matches of all time, he's in them. Yeah, I love him. But
singing all the praises of Io Del Santo here. Everyone go out and watch some Io Del Santo
matches.
Did you have anything else on that one? Or are you ready to move on to a final one?
No, that's good. I'm happy you watched it and it was fun to chat about it.
Dude, so great. It makes me want to check out more of this sort of like CMLL Japan era, to be honest. Yeah. I haven't actually seen much of that stuff, but yeah, so good. But now we make it to our final match of the week of discussion today, that being match of the week number 114, a match that I absolutely adored, one of the greatest tag team matches I think I've ever seen. Got even better on rewatch. We've got the independent dream team of Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki, of FMW and of Michinoku Pro respectively, against the classic All Japan 90s tag team, the Holy Demon Army, Akira Taue and Toshiaki Kawada. This took place during the All Japan Real World Tag League of 1997. This was on November 23, and it took place at the Miyake Prefectural Sports Center in Sendai. And man, this match was bloody something.
Dude, this match ruled. I hadn't seen it before. It was so awesome. First, I gotta say, I love that you described them as FMW guys as indie sleaze super team. No, that was an awesome match. It kind of reminded me, this is like, it kind of reminded me of some of these, I don't know, like this, like this seems like a match Tony Khan would really love. It kind of reminded me of some of the latest AEW tag stuff. Is that a fair?
I mean, I think so, in that it's one of those matches that is just a batshit looking dream match.
Yeah.
That, like, in some ways, you're like, why is this happening kind of thing?
Yeah.
I'm glad that it did. As far as I'm aware, this is the only time these guys ever wrestled one another in a tag team situation like this. And for the magical level of chemistry that they had was just mind blowing. So yeah, I'd say there's definitely one that's sort of similar to some of those Tony Khan, like for the freaks, like kind of like dream match kind of thing.
It's awesome. Yeah, but I just remember that the thing that sticks out the most for me is that 450 splash by Hayabusa at the end, but the breakup by Kawada is like one of the best breakups I've ever seen. He like kicks
all time.
It is
total
awesome.
Desperation, like, right?
Yes, dude, it was so rad. Yeah, this match was awesome. I only got to watch it once. I'm excited just due to timing, but I definitely gonna watch it again when I have time, but
worth it. I think one of the biggest things that stood out to me was like, so this is an All Japan crowd, you know, like Kawada and Taue are their boys, and these are the you know, interpromotional invaders coming in to be part of the tag league. But this crowd like starts out like, I mean, from the entrance on, right? Like when Hayabusa and Shinzaki come out to that like incredible, iconic Hayabusa theme music, and just the coolest visual, like Shinzaki with his like classic sort of like you know, traditional Japanese hat thing and robe and everything, and then as soon as, and the crowd just like mobbing both of them, and then the first time you see Hayabusa in, you know, his beautiful mask and everything, like, he just looks like the coolest, like, most godly wrestler you ever did see. He does this, like, the light is just hitting him in the most perfect way. He does this full sort of, like, circular, like, movement with his sort of, you know, hands out pose, like, just while being mobbed by the crowd. I'm just like, how could you see this dude and not think this is just the coolest shit ever? So
it was so awesome.
I get it.
Yeah, and even the music, everything about that beginning was fucking awesome. I need to watch.
I mean,
more.
It kills me when you have these matches and like they cut off those entrances.
Yeah, because
like a good entrance like that just can really, really set the tone in the best way. But well, yeah, then the idea that it's like the crowd just sort of from that point forward, they just get more and more and more into.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Shinzaki and Hayabusa, and it's just so cool to see even them cheering them their own guys,
right? Yeah, they were like roaring at the end. It's a fun mix of styles that gelled together. I don't, you know, I mean, it wasn't so much a clash as it like it worked. And yeah, because basically the FMW team, they're essentially the heels, right?
I mean, but, in a way, it's funny because it's like by default, you'd say they're the heels because they're the invaders and they're representing, you know, opposition companies. But in the way this match is structured, they really seem like, and this is a credit, I think, to Kawada and to Taue of them putting their everything into making Shinzaki and Hayabusa look as good as they possibly can early on. Because they have like an early part in this match where they just look absolutely spectacular. And that kind of like sets the tone. And then, but the point when they like cut it off is right when Shinzaki's going for like his rope walk. And the fact that they tease it and then take it away and the crowd like boos because they really wanted to see it, you're like, all right, I can see the dynamic here. So, funnily enough, I think the way they work it, the Holy Demon Army of Taue and Kawada are more kind of like playing the role of the heels, which kind of like really worked for this match in an unusual kind of way, just because, you know, Shinzaki and Hayabusa are just so spectacular.
It was awesome. I hadn't seen this match. I need to see more Hayabusa, excuse me. I've seen some of the FMW stuff. That's actually all I've seen.
I mean, I'd say that's his most classic stuff.
Okay, yeah.
The FMW stuff and, you know, the big, you know, exploding ring matches and all that spectacular madness. Some of my favorite stuff was him in the first ever Super J Cup. I think that was probably the first time I ever saw him. That was my introduction to him. And I was just like, my brain melted. So that's another one to start to finish. I'd highly recommend everyone to watch that full first Super J Cup show. Because, you know, so many guys just had a coming out party on that amazing show.
I'll write it down. There's just so much to watch.
There always is.
Just don't have enough time.
That's true.
But yeah, this I need to see this one again. It was awesome, and it was totally different than the other two. So it really was a fun blend with these.
It was a great mix of physicality. Like we got the classic sort of like All Japan Kings Road style physicality from Kawada and Taue, and then just like the beautiful offense of Shinzaki and Hayabusa. And And there actually were like a lot of moments that felt like a, you know, bit of a tangible like fight, like a back and forth kind of thing between the two. It wasn't kind of like the high flying spectacular stuff was really, you know, overtly set up and fake or anything like that. Like it all felt very organic, felt very back and forth. Like the moment I picked for the illustration was a bit early on in the match, in an exchange between Kawada and Hayabusa where he's got him in the corner and Kawada's just laying into him with these chops. And then Hayabusa just kind of like fires up, you know, to sort of show that he can take it. And he, you know, he's not going to let that get him down kind of thing. And man, just seeing that kind of like fire, like that is I think one of the things that really makes Hayabusa special, more so than just being this spectacular flyer.
Didn't he do an excursion in Mexico?
Yes, he did. I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah.
I remember watching something a few years ago. Like his mask and is like inspired by that excursion or something. But so cool. He's got a unique look too.
Oh yeah.
You know, like,
one of the coolest masks of all time.
Yeah.
Like, just the overall look. Like he was one of the first guys to do sort of like the face paint under the mask with the really cool like eye sort of face paint look. And then just looking so badass with all these like gnarly scars that he's got all over his body,
I know.
Like Sabu or something.
Yeah, no, I love that. When you look at this picture right here, when you do these illustrations, do you ever start one and then stop and then do a different scene and test it out, or are you kind of go in locking on one?
There have been occasions where, you know, sometimes I'll like start out a drawing and it won't kind of like work out. Like it's the rarity. Most of the time I just sort of like jump in and it just kind of like organically, you know, you kind of make it work. But there are a few occasions where I've had to sort of like restart the drawing. But generally speaking, like once I sort of like pick the visual of the reference image that I'm going to go with, like I'll generally have like quite a few screenshots that I've taken of the match of moments that kind of like spoke out to me at the time when I was watching them or when I'm doing the rewatch. It feels like a really hard decision for the time. Like I'm really just like, oh, this would be cool, but this would be cool. And then I feel it like because I put so much mental energy into making that choice that sort of like once it's made, it's made.
Yeah, that's fair. Makes sense. Yeah, totally. I love how the blue's kind of like bleeding into Kawada on this one. And, you know, like the background's kind of bleeding in. So rad. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, I sort of started playing with that thing where you kind of can bring in the background colors for foreground element shading a little bit. And it can sort of like have like a interesting effect. I think one of the things of this one that I liked about this particular image is the main focus is on Hayabusa and, you know, again, that like really cool, just like amazing look and this moment of defiance kind of thing. But you just get sort of that bit of Kawada in the foreground. You get enough of him to where, in my mind, it captures sort of the essence of Kawada. You know, you get that classic yellow triangle on the tights. You get his cheeky little semblance of a mullet. Just his ridiculous, stocky kind of like frame. Like, to me, they're the main things that jump out in defining Kawada.
Nice. It's awesome, dude.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. I mean, I always want to talk a little bit about these illustrations because a lot of times that's the first kind of glimpse I'm getting of the match if I haven't seen it before. So it's cool to kind of like, you know, look at them after seeing them too. I definitely need to watch this one again. If I'm being honest, I wish I had time to watch this one a second time the most just because of how much was packed into it. But I wish I had more to offer to say about it, but my nerding out on this one.
Okay, dude.
Wasn't.
I definitely can be the same myself all of the time when I'm sometimes doing these Match of the Week podcasts and you don't quite get time to make it to all of them. This is one of the few occasions where I actually did because it's been so long, you know, since I did these as the
Match
of the Week illustrations.
Yeah.
You sometimes need a bit of a refresher. I think rewatching them was a really fun kind of thing of these three, you know, one after another. It's just like kind of like the same vibe that I would get back in the day when I'd watch like an awesome comp tape that someone put together of just like this, you know, array of matches that are all rad matches but sort of like rad in different kind of ways. And this was really fun and a match that I'd really recommend to everyone, this one in particular. But there are a few other matches that are available that Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki had in that tag league in All Japan during that late 1997 period. that I'd highly recommend checking out as well. One of them actually involving Misawa. So very cool one there.
I'm going to add to my list, Chris. My long list of...
I'm sorry for giving you such a long homework list.
No, it's always fun. Yeah. I just wish I had more time, but it's a treat when I get to, you know, decide on which one to watch. That's just how it is.
Oh, I'm the same, dude. There's never enough time to watch all the great wrestling that's out there. Lately, I think I've been slowly going back and watching more Noah, funnily enough. I think probably been taking up the most of my time. But to show how ridiculously behind I am, that period that I'm still watching, I'm just watching the N1 tournament from like August of 2024. So
oh, wow.
I'm pretty hopeless in terms of ever being able to get caught up, unless I just jump forward, I guess.
It's fun when you're like in a deep dive, though. You know, you're like, for whatever reason, you're like hyper focused on like a period or a wrestler. It's a lot of fun. So that's cool.
I think that's one of the real magical parts about wrestling. It lends itself to you going down a Hijo del Santo rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Or a great Sasuke rabbit hole, or, you know, whatever it might be. But you can just be like, oh man, I just want to watch all of this that I possibly can find. And it's just sort of like a piece of twine that just keeps giving out more. Like, it's awesome, especially if you're like me and have some manic ADD.
Do you ever, on that note, do you ever get obsessed with a match and watch it over and over again, or keep going back to it? I do that a lot.
I mean, I had that for I remember that, I don't know if it was last year or maybe year before, where I did the that Dr. Wagner Jr. versus Atlantis match for like several matches the week in a row, because I just loved it so much and kept watching it.
Is that the one with the opening with the doctor?
Yes.
That was awesome. And then that the way that match starts with like ripping his mask, like he comes out of nowhere, like he's a different mask. I can't remember. That match was awesome. Right? Isn't something weird start with like he comes out, it starts kind of abruptly, right?
Back. Because we've already established that he, in his day job of being a doctor, instead of getting the x-rays or whatever he ordered, he just got a picture of Atlantis, and so that enraged him. So this is the most campy, ridiculous
shit. It's awesome. I adore it. Yeah, and the colors of it, like the room is like yellow. I don't remember. Awesome stuff. But yeah, okay, so you got obsessed with that one. Right on. I love that.
Yeah, it happens from time to time. that Necro Butcher Samoa Joe match is another one. Sometimes fall in love with over and over again. Just a weird, almost like a weird piece of performance art in a way meets wrestling. But yeah, there's a few different ones that are just sort of like feel like a real enjoyable thing to watch and rewatch, and you notice different cool little elements. Sorry, I'm just gonna let Badger inside. She's disrupting this podcast. Something for you.
No worries.
One moment.
Badger.
Badger. Make up your mind. Come on. Go.
All right, you wait. She'll probably be barking to come back out.
Oh, dude, I don't know how that goes. My dog Jeffrey does the same thing. He's upstairs though. No, but I was gonna say with the Terry Funk, Jerry Lawler empty arena match. That's one that I always go back to. And actually, the WWE Vault. I don't remember how long ago it was, but they did a Terry Funk's playlist. I don't know if you saw that. And they had
yes, I did. Like, so good,
dude. They had like really good footage, clean footage of that for the first time. I was surprised because it's Memphis, and I didn't think they owned the library. But they had like really, you know, like good quality of it. But it was so weird for me I watched it so many times in shitty quality that it like kind of became part of the texture kind of became part of the match for me. So it was just a totally different viewing experience. So then I was going back and rewatching the clips of that, not the full match, but yeah, that's the thing. It's like with a lot of these matches, the first time we see them given emotion, quality can be really shitty. And then if you get, you know, you find a different version of it that's cleaner or cleaned up, it adds a new like layer to the match.
It's almost like listening to you know, you might have a favorite old record, and you know, the production techniques from back in the day were a lot more sort of like just a bit rough and almost like the same kind of vibe as you're just watching, listening to something that was like recorded as a live set kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you listen to, they've done like a remaster of it like all these years later, and it sounds really clean, and you can actually hear the difference between the different things, and you're just like, actually, I like the original kind of like version better. Like, this is, it's too crisp now, you know?
Yeah, it's. I think that's the way it is with a lot of things, with how pristine and HD everything is now. Sometimes it's like,
Don't get me started on movies when they do like these, you know, 4K re-releases, using AI to clean up artifacts and stuff. I'm just like, dude, don't mess with it. Let's just get the highest quality scan of the film, you know, that we can, that actually captures the uniqueness of film. Don't try to clean it up and, you know, make it all crisp and nice looking.
Yeah, I want to see that film grain. I want to see that grain on there. I'm always curious. Like, I'm like, oh, like, what's a match that you're obsessed with that maybe you go back to? So the Dr. Wagner one is one of those, and I love that.
Man, there's a lot of those ones from that early CMLL period as well. You know, from anything from that like original kind of like Rise of Mystico. I was thinking recently about the amazing matches that he had with Black Warrior, you know, back in the day, and their incredible Apuestas Mask versus Mask match. You know, Mystico. It was really great to see all the amazing Rudos and the different types of awesome matches that they could have with Mystico around that time, whether it was, like Black Warrior or Averno or Ultimo Guerrero, or, you know, Hijo del Perro Aguayo, another excellent, like, OG Mystico opponent. Like, thinking now with this, like, crazy run that Mystico is still on currently, where I reckon, like, no doubt, like, that guy's got to be in contention for, like, you know, Wrestler of the Year for probably last year and this year.
He actually got my vote. I voted for him this year.
Dude, I think that is very appropriate. Looking back and seeing, like, how great he was, you know, in, like, 2005.
Yeah, it's pretty 2004, crazy.
2004, 2005, 2006. Like, it's crazy to think the longevity that he's had, and the way that he was part of a massive boom period back then for CMLL, and then now probably the most important part of the boom period that's still happening to this day.
It's pretty cool. It's been a lot of fun to tune into CMLL on Fridays and also like see people online talking about it and stuff. I'm sure, like, you know, for me, like, AEW was a big part of, like, when Brian Danielson, like, went down to Mexico and stuff, like, it kind of drew me in.
That match against Blue Panther was, both of them were just beautiful, beautiful matches.
Yeah, so rad. But, thanks again for these three matches. I'm excited to watch that third one again. I gotta find the time.
Dude, no worries at all. Thank you. I'm glad that we got to nerd out about him. Thank you for taking like the special interest of wanting to like talk about the illustration element as well.
Of course.
And you know, I feel like you have a really good eye for things and eye for detail. I really appreciate sort of getting to hear that kind of feedback from you.
Oh yeah, dude, I love it. I love to, you know. Excuse me. I love to listen to the podcast and look at the drawings. Speaking of which, I'm behind, so I've got to drive out of town for work. So I'll be able to listen to these podcasts and catch up. So I'm excited.
Nice. I mean, the one that I really am looking forward to you listening to specifically is the chat. I'm not sure if you've heard, listened to it yet, but the chat that I got to have for the 100th episode with Trash Videos, Andrew Leopold.
Oh, no, I haven't. No, I will listen to that one for sure.
So that's the one I'm excited, mainly because, you know, I know a lot of the stuff that we spoke about on that, about our love of like cult cinema and, you know, that these different things, and he's running like a video store on physical media and all that kind of stuff.
So
I think.
Rad.
When I was talking to him, I actually had you in my mind of like, man, I feel like Richard would love to be here having a beer with us right now.
Oh, well, I am going to do that. Well, I won't do the beer segment because I'll be on the road, but I will definitely listen to it. And I'll let you know what I think. That's exciting.
Cool. Thanks, dude. Yeah, hopefully going forward, it can be a little bit easier to keep up with this, getting to more of like a bi-weekly format. I'm hoping that'll be a better balance for everyone, but we'll see how we go.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to hearing about the show, the cinema, you know, show project or whatever it's called.
Dude, I having a lot of fun with our cult lucha thing and cult getting lucha to screen these amazing old Lucha Libre monster movies for people in a bar. Our first one was just mind-blowingly great. Another one where I wish you could have been able to just transport to the other side of the world to be there in person as well. But yeah, man, I just had the best time, and
so rad.
The next one coming up in on the 22nd of February for El Santo versus Las Momias de Guanajuato, which is just such a great, ridiculous, campy movie. Luchadors fighting mummies. Does it get any better than that? I don't think so.
And they just, like, one of those Blu-ray companies put out like pristine, I think they're 4K transfers of some of those movies. So I'll have to rent.
I saw Kevin Kleinrock of Mars Republic was mentioning that a little while back, and I was quite interested. Andrew actually had a few of the 4K versions of some of those movies in his collection available for purchase at a rough cut closed door screening thing that I went to last night.
Oh, right.
But I just can't wait for us to make our way through all of these movies. The best part is there's so many of them. I'm hoping we'll just never run out.
Wait, are you going to review the movies?
Oh, that'd be a good idea. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun to hear, like, what you're, you know, like, in the, like, oh, this one's my favorite, or I don't know. They're weird movies in the best way possible. Like,
I mean, it's everything that's great about, like, low budget, B-grade pulp cinema.
Oh my god. Well, maybe I'll rent one of these here. Yeah, put that on my list.
Dude, please. Have you seen El Santo versus the Vampire Women before?
I don't know if I have that or if I've seen that one. I actually have a couple in the video plant. I don't think I've seen that one. I'll have to look at the list of which ones. I've only seen a few of them.
That's one I'd highly recommend. That was the official one we started it all off with. That was our cult lucha number one movie that I remember actually watching from Andrew's public access TV show back in the day, Schlock Treatment, on Friday night many years ago. So it was very cool for us to be able to show that to people. But yeah, man, I think that's a really good idea. I think in the future I might look at doing sort of like a maybe some special podcast where we can review some of these movies.
That'd be awesome. Real quickly, I got to ask you, have you seen any of the El Hijo del Santo's like 90s movies that he's done?
Dude, I have not actually, but I'm like very excited to, because they showed a bit of it from that great episode of the Incredibly Strange Film Show that they had on Libre Cinema. And I showed some excerpts of that, you know, as part of the night for our first cult lucha evening. that worked really well, actually.
Awesome.
But yeah, I had some clips from the Hijo del Santo ones, and I was like, yeah. Oh my gosh, we need to get onto this. And I'm definitely think at some point we'll have to be like, you know, if we've shown so much El Santo, we'll be like, all right, now here is Santito.
Absolutely. And I won't spoil anything, but there's some cool moments that have Santo, you know, like he goes and visits, you know, his father's tomb or whatever. And it's cool stuff. It's awesome. But I'll say no more. So I'll let you see it yourself. All
right. I suppose it's definitely on the list. You can let me know which ones specifically you'd most recommend.
Okay, cool. Will do.
Awesome, dude. Well, thank you so much. And as always, we'll keep everyone abreast on any and all future developments of Video Plant. but, dude, I'm just stoked to get to spend some time exchanging our wrestling passions with one another.
Likewise, dude. Thanks again for having me on. It's always fun to chat and nerd out about these matches. So, and I'm excited to catch up and listen to that 100th episode. So thanks again.
Oh, mate, my pleasure. Thanks, dude. See you next time.
Yeah, bye.
Oh, where we go. What a lovely little nerd out chat. And I especially loved our little Lucha movie nerd out bit there at the end. Like, Richard was definitely one of the key people where I was like, man, if we only had an easier way to get from the Pacific Northwest to Brisbane, the Sunshine State of Australia, I would love to get to have Richard at these Lucha monster movie nights. But I love that we get to, you know, kind of nerd out about the main concept. And I'm definitely keeping Richard abreast of all of our film picks as we have them locked in. But yeah, man, I hope you guys enjoyed that one. I hope you got something out of our wrestling nerd outs there. Again, appreciative of Richard wanting to talk a little bit about the art. Always makes me happy with the podcast called Wrestling Art when we can also talk about some of the art element as opposed to just the wrestling. But yeah, it's what a nice little time. I hope that I brought in a better kind of energy for you in our new bi-weekly format. I don't know whether it's because I've had a week off. I have a little bit more juice, but I'm feeling good about this thing. I would like to thank everyone for listening. Thank everyone for supporting. If you feel like, you know, buying a Chris thing of your own, whether it be a Match of the Week art print or one of my, like, Lucha Libre paintings or all sorts of my art, I got it all up on christhings.com.au, including those calendars that I mentioned earlier, t-shirts, what have yous, but if that is the kind of thing that floats your boat, jump on over to christhings.com.au. Or even if you don't want to buy, you can go on there and you can read a little bit about the art if you feel like it. Have a little gander. oh, man. Sometimes I feel like I have to spruik too much on this show, right? I don't know. This is my job. I am doing this as for a livelihood somehow. It's this ridiculous life that I'm living. But it's not lost on me that I feel very lucky and privileged to be able to do so. But I'd also like to thank the great team at Social Suplex. SocialSuplex.com is the home, the hub of this podcast, as well as a variety of other fun wrestling podcasts, from One Nation Radio to Keeping It Strong Style to we've got Kookaburra in the background. We really are up here in Australia, guys. I've lost my train of thought. Just beautiful sounding creatures, right? We've got a Joshi podcast on that show. We've got Imps WWE Adventure. We've got All Things Elite. Now we've got Bugs. Kookaburras and Bugs. Oh, why do I do this to myself? I should just have this on a list. Instead, I just get so easily distracted. Tunnel Talk, We've got the Trish and Sarah podcast. A lot of fun shows up there, so check them out. I'm delighted to be a proud neighbor to these other podcasts on the network. And yeah, thanks so much, guys. I'm enjoying doing this thing. I just did my big competition draw this morning. So we had the 5,000 follower benchmark that we got to on Instagram. Yes, 5,000 people voluntarily wanting to see my absurdly niche wrestling art. And I was very stoked about that. So I did a little competition, you know, art giveaway kind of thing. I did the draw this morning, so you can watch the video on my Instagram page, Chris Things on Instagram, if you feel like doing so. But yeah, it's funny. I did the original one on like a live Instagram video, and it like cut off halfway, but I didn't know it. So I'd already done like the draw out of the hat. So I felt like really wrong about re-recording it and like picking it again. So I was like, in a way, like that person already got picked. So I had to do the video and just acknowledge that I already did it. But the funniest part was that the winner ended up being a dear pal of mine, Juan, who, yeah, I didn't want people to think that I just picked my mate, but, you know, he was just the one that happened to come out, you know, and also someone that supported a lot of my different, you know, art things, come to a bunch of, like, my shows, wrestling club nights, all the stuff, always, like, spruks my art to anyone that'll listen. Absolutely rad dude. So I was stoked that it got to go to Juancho. And yeah, that's the latest, guys. That's my last of my rambles. I'll let you get back to it. I hope to see as many of you all as possible this Sunday night at Cult Lucha Dose. And if you are on the other side of the world and can't make it, hopefully we can catch you up a little bit on it on the next podcast. But thanks so much. I hope you guys have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful week or a wonderful couple of weeks until you hear me from me next. I hope you're having fun working on whatever creative projects you might have on the go. And I hope you can enjoy life as much as you can. All right, guys. Till next time. This has been Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris Things. Enjoy!
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.